This episode of the Flush Podcast is brought to you by North Dakota Tourism, Federal Premium Ammunition, Onyx Hunt, Chief Upland, and by Huron, South Dakota. Today, we're inviting you on a pheasant hunt with us this fall in South Dakota. Scott Franzen joins the show to explain this bird hunt in detail and why we want you to join us at bird camp while filming a future episode of the Flush television show.
The Flush. So fast, it hardly seems real. So vivid, the moment freezes in time before erupting in a blur of spurs and feathers. It's why we changed the way upland loads are built with Prairie Storm. Exclusive flight control FlexWad technology and a mix of copper-plated lead and flight stopper pellets combine to create dense, deadly shot strings through any choke. Longer shots, more power, fewer missed birds. Only from Federal.
If you're looking for a great bird hunting destination this season, then I strongly recommend that you consider one of my favorite places to hunt. That's North Dakota. North Dakota is a bird hunter's paradise. You can hunt both waterfowl and upland birds all in the same day. Ducks in the morning, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, and Hungarian partridge in the afternoon, or vice versa. North Dakota has a population estimate of 2.9 million breeding ducks, which is 19% above the long-term average, and their prairie pothole region is smack dab in the middle of the central flyway. Last season, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, and Hungarian partridge numbers rose in North Dakota, and there are reports coming out that some areas of the state have numbers that are even higher this year. We've been talking about the bird numbers in North Dakota for months now, and there's a chance that this season could be one of the best we've seen in decades. North Dakota has approximately 800,000 acres of private land open to public walk-in hunting. For the latest plots guide, visit the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Bag your limit this fall in North Dakota. Visit legendarynd.com to start planning your hunting adventure today. Music show open. Don't leave that in, by the way.
Leave that in.
There you go. Yes. Music show. Okay. Oh. Welcome to another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank. I'm your host, Brandon Morton, as always, produces this program. Brandon, thank you for sharing your many talents with us. That little whine you heard is Daisy. She wants to go run around with her pack outside of our, what do we call this? Are we calling this a podcast room, Scott?
The official podcast studio.
Yeah, the official podcast studio. Scott Franzen, man of many talents, as well as back in the podcast studio. Welcome back to the show, my friend and my boss man.
Thank you, Travis. Yeah. It's always nice to spend time with you and Daisy.
Yeah, mostly Daisy.
Mostly Daisy.
I'll take the compliment, too. You just returned from Montana. What part of the state were you in? What part of bird country did you drive through? And what were your observations?
I was in the kind of south-central part of the state. Let's see. What my observations were, it's really dry in eastern Montana, at least along the interstate. Then there was a belt kind of between, I would say, Terry, Montana and Forsyth, Montana, so including Miles City and whatnot, where it didn't seem quite as dry, especially for this time of year. And then down where I was, kind of in the Red Lodge area, it was, I think they've, quote unquote, had dry weather, but it didn't look too dry. And North Dakota was better than it was earlier, much better than it was really earlier than it in the summer, like in June. Yeah, I thought it greened up quite a bit.
I would echo that. After just coming back from Montana myself, I was amazed on the way out and the way back how green North Dakota looked. I know there were some areas that did look a little bit drier. And I think the biggest thing that I saw was just that the cover was maybe a little thinner.
Yeah.
You know, the grass wasn't quite as tall and thick, but it was green out there.
Right. And if you're a waterfowl hunter, I mean, the potholes were definitely down. I mean, they're down 2 to 3 feet.
Yeah.
But
if you find the ones with water, you're going to find just another load.
Yeah. You should find birds.
Yeah. And we've talked about this the past couple of weeks. I don't think, it's worth canceling a hunting trip because of this drought that we've had this summer. I think there's still birds on the landscape, and it's still worth it. You're going to have pockets that are going to be better, pockets that are going to be worse, but it's still worth taking the trip. And last week I talked about this too. I've heard people say I'm canceling hunting trips this fall because of it. And my advice to you, if you're thinking about that, is don't cancel the hunting trip.
I don't know why you'd ever cancel a hunting trip.
I don't either. Even if you don't get a bird.
I don't know why you'd ever do that. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's I love, and I'm a sucker this way, because I tend to go back to spots year after year after year, especially if I've had some success there. And I like seeing them in the different conditions and then learning how the animals relate to that, or they might be down. Okay, so you hunt harder. That's part of the game. It's not called killing, right?
Right.
We're out there to hunt.
If you want to just go shoot some birds, you might as well just go to
preserve.
Yeah, exactly. I enjoy the hunt. It makes everything rewarding. The challenges overcome make the hunt something memorable. So, yeah.
The one thing I say about the drought and in some of these areas too is they did get late rain, which could help with some late hatches. However, even with the drought, there was an unbelievable grasshopper hatch.
Yeah.
And so there were bugs for the birds to eat. And what I had heard, and maybe we talked about this too, Travis, is brood sizes. The broods were there. They're just smaller, the brood sizes. And so there should be whatever game bird you're chasing, whether it's the Dakotas or wherever it was, you know, quote unquote drought stricken, there still should be birds around.
Right. Yeah. And one topic too, Scott, we don't need to continue this too much longer, but one thing that I've talked about a couple times over the last month is what could happen this winter because of the habitat being thinner. You know, if we get a harsh winter, that's where we might see a real impact on the birds not being able to make it through. But for right now, for this hunting season, don't cancel your plans.
Don't never
there
cancel
are birds
hunting
out
trip.
In the field.
Never cancel hunting trip.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of hunting trips, that's why you're on the show today. We've got a very big announcement. Before we get to it, though, a couple, we'll call them housekeeping items to go over. This week, Pheasants Forever, along with several other national organizations, launched what they're calling the North American Grasslands Conservation Act. This is a massive group effort on their part to stand up for America's disappearing grasslands, much like the Disappearing Wetlands Act. This mission will be crucial to our landscape for generations to come. To learn more about the National Grasslands Act, you can head to Pheasants Forever's website or follow #ActForGrasslands on social media. Scott, a couple weeks ago, we were able to donate, I believe it was $1,600 to Pheasants Forever, thanks to our listeners and followers that follow us. We had a limited supply of hats and buffs that we wanted to sell, and then all of the proceeds were going to go to Pheasants Forever. So a big shout out to each one of you for purchasing.
100%. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
By the way, your hat looks very nice, Travis.
Yeah, I did. You're looking pretty good yourself, too. We're both wearing our flush hats today. We're matching. It's really cute, right?
Aww. It's our podcast uniform.
It's our podcast uniform. Where's your buff? I don't see you wearing a buff.
Oh, I forgot the buff.
Yeah. We went to a Pheasants Forever. What was the name of that shoot that we did with
Place
them?
For Conservation.
Yes. Yeah. And that was a really, really well put on event. Bob St. Pierre, Matt Kucharski, they put that one on here in central Minnesota, and they've done it now for I don't know how many years, but one of us
it was fun.
Yeah, it was. We had five of us on our team, and we shot, and it was good to get the dust out
knock some of the rust off.
Yeah.
For some of us more than others.
Some more than others. Yeah. You don't need to talk numbers, but we'll just say one of our salesmen got the high score.
Yeah. Well, now we know why he's not at budget, too.
Anyway, are we going to have more hats and flush items for sale for conservation again?
We are. Yes. We got asked this question actually at the event. And we just kind of pulled things back over the summertime. People aren't really thinking about, you know, their latest buff or their hat or whatnot. But yeah, we will probably in the next week or two put the hats and the buffs back for sale online. look for a post on our social media channels on Facebook, Instagram. You may talk about it in the upcoming podcast as well, and we'll let you know when the store goes live. Mm-hmm. And then it's a pretty easy clicking process if you want to get your own flush hat and or buff.
Yeah, and again, we gave all that money right back into the Pheasants Forever Build a Wildlife campaign, or was it Call of the Uplands?
It was Build a Wildlife
okay.
area campaign. Yep. And that's, we're just trying to put our money where our mouth is.
Yeah.
We promote, you know, hunting on public land. That's what we try to show 80% of the time, I'd say, Travis, wouldn't
you? Yeah, I would
you?
Say. And yeah, it's not 100%. I mean, we do stories of all varieties
correct.
In the upland hunting world.
And we're finding the stories. Mm-hmm. But with that in mind, it's important to reinvest in that public land.
Yep.
And that's, there's no better way to do it than with Pheasants Forever. So that's what we're trying to do.
Yep. And you look stylish.
And you look good.
You look good.
You can be part of the team if you wear your flush cap.
There you go.
They might think you're Ron Scher out in the field.
Oh, maybe, maybe. Do you ever get confused for Ron Scher?
No, I'm much better looking.
All right. Well, on the housekeeping list, we have... So, how many podcasts do we produce as a company?
Oh, gosh.
Brandon, how many are you cranking out a week?
Is it 15? 15 or 16?
15, 16, something like that. So, here are a couple that we help produce that may be of interest to you. First, Walton's Inc. is a long partner of ours. They produce a podcast called Meat Gistics from Animal to Edible. John and Austin do a great job of talking about a variety of meat-related topics to help you get the most out of wild game and any meat that you're going to cook. Plus, they actually find a lot of really controversial and interesting topics. I always am amazed at the stuff that they find. So that's a podcast you could check out going into hunting season. You might learn a few more. Obviously, you're going to learn everything you need to know right here, Scott.
That's right.
What? Yeah, but if you just need a little bit more.
You're a walking dictionary.
Yeah, right. And then there's It's Federal Season. Is it another podcast in our lineup that may interest you? We all know about the high demand for ammunition and the interesting firearm and ammunition world right now. You can tune into their podcast, learn more about what's happening in the industry from some of the experts. Again, that's It's Federal Season. Then a new one that we just recently launched in our tree of podcasts called Raising Your Paws, which is produced by our friends at Nutrisource Pet Foods. Raising Your Paws is a go-to resource for both cat and dog parents. Each episode will offer you quick tips, practical solutions, and insights from leading authors and experts that will help you increase your skills, feel more in control, save time, and give you the confidence to know what to do in caring for your four-legged family members. Susan Frank is your host. She's not related to me, but she has a wonderful last name, so I'm sure she's just fantastic. So you can check that out. So three podcasts besides this. Can we just say award-winning? People say award-winning all the time.
Well, yeah, they're award-winning.
Scott gave me an award one time, Employee of the Month. So this is an award-winning podcast.
Travis, you can give the same award to the podcast.
So technically, this is an award-winning.
That and a hearty handshake will get you a long way.
Technically, this is an award-winning podcast.
Yep.
Oh, any other housekeeping items I missed?
I don't think so.
Gosh, I just did my job, Brandon. Look at
this.
You
just did.
Yeah, you can't even complain about anything. I'm going to call it a day as soon as we're done here.
Yeah, you've put in a full day. It's already 9:30.
Well, I will say that this was supposed to start 10 minutes earlier than we did, and it's not because of me not being here, Scott.
I brought breakfast.
That's cookies from yesterday's staff lunch. That
no,
doesn't count.
No, I just whipped those up, Travis. I happen to have one of these plastic things at home.
Oh, sure, sure. I know, I always have beef jerky in my boat when I take people fishing. I was like, guys, I just made some jerky for you. And they're like, wow, nice packaging. I was like, I've got a Walton's...
vacuum sealer.
Vacuum sealer. And it looks official, but that's for you. That's how I operate. Anyway, let's get to what people care about most is the topic that I teased right off the top of this show, and that is a pretty cool announcement that you are about to make, Scott. What in the heck are you signing yourself up for this fall?
Oh, God knows, Travis. there's too many things to count. But this one in particular is something we talked about a little bit when we were... had the podcast regarding Hank's passing. Mm-hmm. And you and I had discussed a couple of ideas, and really it goes this way. One, I just can't bury another dog on television. I think people are sick of seeing me cry. I know my girls tell me I'm an ugly crier, so I just can't look at that on television anymore.
I was going to say something, but you're my boss, so I didn't.
And I, you know, I want to celebrate. I want to celebrate Hank. He was a great dog and so full of life. And so we discussed it. I thought about it. And what better way to do that than to go hunting, right? Mm-hmm. And why not invite some of our listeners, our viewers, our Facebook friends, our Instagram friends to join us in what I'm going to call a Hank hunt. So what's a Hank hunt? Mm-hmm. Well, it's for me, and I think this is probably true for a lot of people, it's friends, dogs in the field hunting, watching their companions and their buddies do what we love to do, which is chase wild birds, follow our bird dogs, maybe heckle each other a little bit on a missed shot, high five on a good shot, and tell a few stories at the end of the day.
That's kind of the thing that, since I've been a part of this company and some of these outings that we do, we do it on everyone. And maybe this is something that Ron Shara started years ago.
So. Yeah.
But you know, we have this this trip we do up in Canada each year, and it's a fishing trip. And after the fishing is done for the day, it's kind of a toast at dinner, and we tell stories.
Right.
And he's done that at turkey camp for I don't know how many decades of running his turkey camp. And we do it on a South Dakota pheasant hunt with friends as well. And so it's a memorable part of every single day where everybody comes together. You're gonna host this event?
I'm gonna host this. It's and I'll back up and on that note isn't that what hunting and fishing trips are supposed to be about?
Yeah.
Creating memories.
Yeah.
And so that's what we want to start something. And if people like it, we might do this every year. And make it a moving show. And maybe you host one, and Ron can host one, and Bill can host one.
Well, yeah, let's Bill talk could about definitely. Ron could host one. I don't think people would want to hang out with me for a couple days.
But... No, but they might with Daisy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So
here's where it is. It's going to be at Brown's Lodge and Hunting Ranch in South Dakota. It's just west of Gettysburg. A great facility and a really good friend of the show's. We're hunting wild birds. This is not a preserve hunt, and it's going to be late season, which will add to the challenge and some of the euphoria or angst, too.
Yeah.
The dates of the hunt are, or this is how it'll work. We'll arrive early on the evening of the 5th of December, have dinner, social hour, et cetera. Meet and greet, exactly. We'll hunt the 6th and the 7th, and then people will depart after breakfast on the 8th. So it's 3 nights and 2 days of hunting.
Yep.
Now, here's a couple of the key details. It's limited in capacity. We can accommodate up to 10 adult hunters and up to maybe 6 additional youth hunters. And the youth hunters are 12 to 17 years old.
Okay.
What's important if you're considering bringing your son or daughter, and we'd love to have them come, is they need to have their hunter safety certification completed.
If they're going to hunt.
If they're going to hunt.
What if, let's say, a 10-year-old wants to come be a part of it, mother or father wants to bring, you know, a son or daughter that's 10, 11, that just to be a part of it doesn't want to hunt. Can they do that?
100%. And that's a different price point. If they're going to hunt, it's half the price, and I'll get into that later. And then if they're just going to come and walk and participate in, you know, kind of walking the hunt and have the meals, there's even a different price point on that I can share as well. So it's all doable, but it's limited. And it's kind of first come, first serve because of the small number. I didn't want too many people, you know. It's not as enjoyable if there's 20 people marching a field. So we're going to hunt in smaller groups.
Yep.
Let people see their dogs work if they're bringing dogs. Brown's has a fleet of dogs as well if you don't have a dog and still would like to join us. Millie's going to be there. This will hopefully be her 4th or 5th or 6th hunt by then. We'll see.
So she's going to be a seasoned veteran.
Hopefully. Hopefully. She's making progress, Trav.
And how about you, though? Have you made any progress?
Well, we'll see. You know me. I'm kind of...
I think you're going the wrong direction
on the slow train to nowhere. So let me tell a little bit more what's included in this.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's three nights lodging, that dinner that first night, like I said, then all the meals, 6th and the 7th, then your breakfast on the 8th when you leave. There's 2 days of guided pheasant hunting for wild birds, bird processing, et cetera, and you can keep up to 3 roosters a day. We'll bring some swag from the flush and our partners, hats, shells, maybe some dog food, things like that. So there'll be some neat tchotchkes that way. Mm-hmm. And we're going to film this.
Yeah.
This is going to be a show in our 2022 season.
You get to be on the flush.
You get to be on the flush. You and your, if you have a dog, you and your canine companion.
Your kids, your buddies. Yeah. It's a pretty cool, I wouldn't say pretty, it's a very cool opportunity. Something that we haven't really done other than the last 2 years. We did this virtual auction mm-hmm. with Pheasants Forever, the pheasant hunting road trip in South Dakota last year. And now we're doing one again this fall. And there's definitely an interest for people that want to be a part of a hunt like this, kind of see how producing a TV show goes. But really, I think, you know, we just, when we go on the road like that, we're there to document the hunt and tell the story. And the cameraman's almost invisible in the piece, just recording everything that's happening.
Right.
And then we put it together afterwards. But yeah, you get to be a part of the show and create these memories out there with other hunters, bring a group. I think it's cool, Scott.
Well, and we've talked about this, and we've probably used the word way too much, is the bird hunting fraternity. But this is to make some new friends, too.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about sharing a field with some, and we do get to do it a lot, Travis, really, mm-hmm. you more than I even doing the show, you meet some really neat people
yeah.
and you wish you could hunt with them again, right?
Yes.
And so we're going to do that and we're going to celebrate dogs, dogs that are past, dogs that are with us in the field on this trip and dogs to come and make it hopefully a really neat event for people.
Yeah. Did you get into, are we going to do anything with any of the money? Because I know we're booking up a hunting lodge during hunting season. So that's where the you know, we obviously have to pay for their
right,
their
right.
space and everything. But we're not taking
No, this is this yet. Is the cost of the hunt is purely goes to the lodge.
Yeah.
There's nothing there for the flush or things like that. Now, we haven't even talked about this part. If we wanted to, maybe we'd auction off something, I don't know, to go to Pheasants Forever. That don't get it too complicated, Travis. I'm having trouble getting all the ducks in a row on this hunt thing.
Get your bleep together, Scott.
Here's when you talk about the cost.
Yeah.
Let me go into that. So the cost on this for 3 nights in 2 days is $1,800 per adult hunter, turnkey. If you have a youth hunter between the ages of 12 and 17 with their hunter safety certification, it's half price.
Wow.
And if you purely want to bring your husband or wife or a younger child to be a part of this but not hunt, I'm going to have you, Robin has a price for that, and I think it's just $200 for room and board. I'll confirm that, or you can confirm that with Robin, but I think it's $200 a day for room and board for those that just want to walk the field. That price does not include any tax. I don't know what that is. I think there's a state tax or gratuities or beverages, adult beverages. You can either bring your own or they have a cash bar there if you want to buy a beer or something. It's limited, again, to 10 hunters.
Yep.
And up to 6 youth hunters that can join in the hunt. If you want to join us, here's how you can do it. Call this number, 605-765-9150. Ask for Robin. Because the space is limited, and this is kind of an intimate hunt, if you want to do it, Robin will probably ask for a credit card to hold your position in the hunt. When you reserve your spot. She did want me to tell you, too, if you want to hunt an additional day or two, that is an option.
Okay.
And she can work with you on that after we're done filming. So people can stay for another day if they wanted to, perhaps even another 2 days and continue to hunt.
Okay.
For probably that $900 a day fee that they're paying for this hunt.
Gotcha. And it's a great lodge too. Ron
it's
is
a great
actually
lodge.
We filmed years there, ago.
We filmed there once, I know.
Mm-hmm.
They have cabin setups, so each cabin has its own separate bedroom and bathroom. And a great lodge and eating area, and it's right along the river, I think.
Beautiful rolling hills.
Yep. Gettysburg is a neat area. It's right kind of almost in the center of the state.
Yep.
So convenient, depending on where you may be coming from. It should be a lot of fun. And like I said, it's going to be late season hunting. So it could be snow. Could be a lot of snow. And it could be, you know, could be balmy. I've been in South Dakota hunting in 55 degrees in early December. So you just don't know.
Yeah. What excites you the most about this hunt? Anything in particular?
One, to meet new people that are fans of the show and want to be a part of it, and a different way to celebrate a great hunting dog. You know, this isn't going to be just about Hank, but it's going to have his name on it, and he would have loved this.
Oh, I'm sure.
He would have loved just not only the hunting, just, you know, kind of the setting and stuff like that. So that's and it's something we haven't done. So I'm kind of excited about that to give it a try.
Yeah. So you mentioned the phone number. I think we should probably
do that again.
Maybe do that again, but also include Brandon when we put this out. Maybe we include a link to Brown's, because when you said Robin, that's at Brown's.
At Brown's Hunting Ranch, Brown's Lodge and Hunting Ranch. Yeah.
What would be their website? Do you know? Or if you could just do a search for Brown's.
Yeah, Brown's Lodge and Hunting Ranch in Gettysburg. You can do that search. She thought it best just to call because
this is
a
unique
deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she could get things settled best that way.
I'm thinking because of the cabin setup, it's probably going to make sense to try to bring at least one person with you, or, you know, up to four maybe. Does that sound about right?
Right. So the way she described it, so let's say you and I were going to go together and be partners in this hunt.
Yeah.
You would have one room, I would have a different room, and we'd share a cabin, and we both have our own bathrooms and deck and things like that.
Gotcha.
If you were to bring your son or daughter, they would stay with you in your room.
Yep.
Or your spouse or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And so whoever's filming with me, he and I will share a cabin.
Yeah. Gotcha. Right on.
That poor sucker.
Right. Well, I think it should fill up pretty quickly.
We hope.
I think.
We hope people want to join us.
Yeah,
it should be fun.
You know, you're an okay guy. I'll vouch for you. You're an okay guy.
Solidly okay.
Solid guy to hunt with. You know, your jokes could use a little.
I'll polish up
little
on
work,
that.
But
I'll work on that.
I think really the biggest thing is the time you're going to spend with other hunters out there too.
Yeah.
And a real hunt.
And sharing something that's very personal probably to all of us and you know, with our dogs and hunting too. I mean, we're blessed to be able to do these things in the United States of America and go hunt wild birds.
Mm-hmm.
And so we should, you know, do it as much as we can. Don't cancel your hunts this fall, guys. Do
exactly.
Not cancel your hunts.
And add this one to your list.
I
would imagine we'll post some other information on social media.
Yes.
But I think, you know, like you said, 10 hunters, that's likely going to fill up quick.
Quick, yep. Hopefully.
Hopefully.
And when it's done, it's done. So we will continue to post things on social media as long as there is availability.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And we'll also post about, you know, the swag that's coming out, the flush hats and that information too. So most of you that listen to this show probably already follow us, but it would be at The Flush TV, both on Instagram and on Facebook. And you'll get more information there as well. So with that, we have a quick note from a couple of our presenting sponsors. Onyx being the first. Besides a bird dog, a shotgun, and a good pair of boots, the Onyx Hunt app is one of the most valuable hunting tools that I take into the field every single day. I've been talking about the Onyx Hunt app since we started producing this podcast, and that's simply because I use it on every hunt. Their app tells me everything that I need to know about the lands that I want to hunt and the lands that we can all legally hunt together. If you've used it yourself, then you know that the Onyx Hunt app shows your location on planet Earth and clearly lays out the land boundaries. It also tells you information about the type of property that you're on, like state land or the block management lands that we hunted last week in Montana. It's ideal for scouting before the hunt and during a hunt to help put together patterns. The app also has new features this year that show you the kind of crops that are in fields, which obviously is a big deal for us upland bird hunters. If you hunt grouse in the Northwoods, there's a timber cut layer to help you find ideal habitat. If you're planning to hunt North Dakota this year like me, then there's a very important layer that has just been added to the app. For the first time, landowners in North Dakota can post their property electronically. Onyx has you covered to make sure you don't cross the line on property that has been posted electronically. Onyx maps can be used in areas without cell coverage too. From the palm of your hand, Onyx maps always help you to know where you stand. For generations, bird hunters have hit the fields carrying some form of a vest or game pouch on their backs. Sometimes the vests rip, tear, and fall apart. Other times they're downright uncomfortable. That's why Chief Upland designed a vest that's durable, comfortable, and fits your needs. Their new Upland vest is fully customizable to fit the size and shape of all hunters. Plus, you can decide where you want to attach your shell pouches and accessories. Birds can be front-loaded into the game pouch and they fit nicely in the back without sagging. That's a big deal because the weight disbursement on your back and shoulders won't tire you out even with a full pouch of birds. The vest itself is extremely lightweight, weighing only 2.56 pounds. The material is built out of Cordura fabric, which is the same waterproof fabric used in tactical military gear. You can confidently hunt with a Chief Upland vest in some of the world's toughest environments. Order your Chief Upland vest now to make sure that you're ready for opening day. Push further and hunt longer with a game-changing vest from Chief Upland, built for your pursuit.
Hey, Upland hunters. If you're looking for a place to chase roosters this fall, you need to check out Huron, South Dakota. Here's why. The access to public hunting land is awesome. They have plenty of pet-friendly hotels for the hardest-working member of your hunting group. In addition, Huron is hosting a couple great events this hunting season, the first weekend of November. The Ringneck Festival, a six-man competitive hunt, which draws hunters from all over the country, and the Bird Dog Challenge. It's the opportunity you and your dog have been waiting for, complete with food, prizes, camaraderie, and so much more. The South Dakota pheasant season opens October 16th, so plan your hunting trip to Huron, South Dakota today. Check out the website and learn more at huronsd.com.
Scott, besides the hunt that we just shared, what are you most excited about for this upcoming season?
Well, I've got a new dog, as you know, that's getting ready to go out in the field, and I'm excited for all that that brings. You know, the challenges, the successes, the laughs, the frustration. Although I will say, you know, you never know when you get out there, but thus far, Millie has not given me a lot to be frustrated about in her training.
Yeah.
She's a avid learner, a lot of fun, but that's going to be the fun part. Is it's a whole new ball game for me, and that's kind of the life cycle of your dogs. You go through this mourning period, and I still mourn Hank, and this is the first dog I'm going to have out in the field alone without a buddy in a long time, but it rejuvenates you too. It's a new beginning. And you get to start that chapter all over again.
How old will Millie be on opening day?
She'll be 7 months. So she will, her first hunt will probably be, she'll probably be 7.5 months old.
Okay. And what age have you taken your other dogs out in the field?
About the same. I think the youngest one I had in the field was 6.5, just about 7 months. And pheasant hunting, he was a little bit clueless. He learned quickly, though, from my older dog. But he Actually, I didn't have an older dog when I had Gus, but he caught on to duck hunting right away. In fact, I won a case of beer from a buddy that said he thought he never would retrieve this duck that was way out there, and he paid up. I mean, it was one of the longest retrieves I'd had a dog made, and I only had to throw one rock before Gus saw it, and he went out and got it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, just being back from the first hunting trip of the season, it just feels so damn good to get back out there.
I'm seeing all the pictures load up on my social media of the grouse hunters out there, and I'm like, oh, I wish I had a trip planned right now.
Yeah. It's worth it. I have mentioned this so many times in the past, but if you're an upland bird hunter and you've never traveled west to hunt, let's say you live east of the Mississippi River and you've never traveled somewhere west, whether it be the Dakotas, Wyoming, Montana, some of those big country, wide open areas, you feel small when you're out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the habitat is so much different. Even the eastern half of South Dakota, there's a lot of cattail walking.
Yep.
A lot of thick cover. That's not traditionally the case in that western areas. And you're able to really watch your dog out there.
You are.
And it's just something that you can't appreciate till you're out there, because the views that you have, the distance, big sky country didn't get a name for no reason.
Right.
And the sheer volume of land access, that is what always blows my mind. Those landowners, last week in Montana, there were some tracts of land that were 20,000 acres, wow. 30,000 acres of private land open to hunting because of the block management system that they have out there. And then you got state land on top of it. You got BLM on top of it. You're talking millions of acres. And there were places where we would start walking and we didn't even scratch the surface.
And you can lose yourself out there,
which is what you want to do. Go on a hunt sometime where you can lose yourself.
Yeah.
Drop a pin on your truck and then just start walking.
And just start going.
Yeah. And the birds are out there, obviously. If you followed any of our social media, you've seen that we did okay. But it was just more so for me. I mean, we had great food. We cooked them up right there. It's kind of like, when we go on a fishing trip, yep. We always have that shore lunch. I just make that my norm, that we're cooking birds out there when we're on a
hunt. Especially when you're camping. I mean, that just adds a special flavor to it. No matter what, really.
Yeah.
But when you're out on the prairie and you're cooking your freshly harvested birds, and it's pretty special.
Yeah, we had sharptail pizza opening night from our sharptails that we harvested that morning. And it was just, oh gosh, it was just the best. And I think there's something about eating it out there, But
well, I saw a recipe on the show that's airing this week that you guys made with, was it sharptails or huns? And it was with a chutney. And
oh, yeah, the peach chutney.
Oh, my
chutney.
Gosh, that
oh,
looks
my
so
goodness.
Good.
We have to figure out how to do a better job, and this is probably on me, so I'm calling myself out here, but of getting that recipe from whoever cooks it in the show.
Especially social media-wise.
And posting that,
yeah.
Making it available. Because we've had people reach out, so dang it.
That
why would I ever call
phenomenal.
Myself out like this?
Oh,
it was better.
Note to self, I'm dotting a note down here.
Yeah, pay cut.
Damn it.
But yes, that peach chutney. And actually, so that recipe is available online. Marissa Jensen posted it on Pheasants Forever's blog. So if you go on Pheasants Forever website and search peach chutney, you're going to find that recipe. Do it.
It looked phenomenal.
It was better than it looked.
I called my wife down. I said, Gene, you have to watch this.
Yeah.
Look what they're making. Doesn't that look good?
Yeah. Where are you excited to hunt this fall?
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I'm really excited to go back to some areas in western North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
I have an annual trip in eastern North Dakota I do. Mm-hmm. I have, I'm really excited about this hunt in December, the Hank Hunt.
Yeah.
By the way, the number again is 605-765-9150. Ask for Robin. I've got friends that I've hunted with, and I've chronicled some of that. But I love hunting in western Minnesota, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's very akin to being in South Dakota. There's a lot of public land, a lot of good public land. And you can spend a couple of days just walking and finding birds, on public land. And I've got to try one new state this year. I'm not sure what it is. I might try Nebraska, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to like that. Yeah, there's a nice variety of birds down there, too, and I've heard good reports. We're actually going to, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to have the, we're bringing in the big guns. We're bringing in some experts to give us the bird report. So actually next week, we're going to break down, we've got all the numbers coming in from North Dakota. So we're going to break down different parts of the state, their brood counts. We're going to talk pheasants, sharptails, huns, waterfowl. We're going to give all that information out because the numbers are in. So we're going to have an expert from North Dakota on the show. I'm looking forward to that because, as you and I both know, we love it up there.
Love that state.
Yeah. But then the week after, we're going to have the pheasant forecast for the country.
Awesome.
So Tom Carpenter is going to join me. He's the editor at Pheasants Forever that puts together that annual publication. So we're going to break down places that you want to go to, places you want to avoid. It's an exciting time. We're getting back out in the field and we're getting information in, and like we've said 15 times already, don't cancel your hunting trip this year. Don't cancel your trip.
Well, it feels like autumn right now.
Yeah, at least 49 here in Minnesota. Degrees this morning.
Yeah, the humidity is gone from the air. It's getting cool at night, and that just gets the juices flowing.
Yep, it does. We're not the only ones.
The muskies
that
are biting, right, Travis?
They're always, if you know where to cast. today's retrieving memory is one that will take a little while to tell, but I think it's worth it. It's a story written by Randy Herline. He wrote this one back in May of 2006 to help him get over the loss of it, over his dog. It's titled, Whose Pup? That's what he's called this one. Again, May 1st, 2006, he sent it in a few weeks ago for us to read. It seemed that it was finally time to get that bird dog pup that I had so longed for. All the conversations with different dog breeders and the reading of bird dog publications, I figured the best bet for my family was an English setter. Should I mention the fact that I only had one chance at this? My wife loves dogs, but she had witnessed a couple of bird dogs that would wear your patience out in just a few seconds. Previous discussions about getting a dog had contained the word never, and he puts that in all capitals. Well, proceeding with the utmost care, I happened to mention to a coworker my concerns, and he brought his dog to work one day. Foggy was from the old Hemlock lineage of setters and quite the gentleman. One conversation with the breeder settled it for me. Now was the tough part, my wife. Begging and promising were the biggest part of that battle, and we would soon find out how far the war would go. The pups were whelped on May 21st, 1999, and I could hardly wait. The plan to go get the pup had been my focus for almost 6 weeks, and then something surprising happened. My 14-year-old boy showed up and decided the pup was going to be his. I knew it would help with my wife, as two excited family members are always better than one. Neither of us had ever trained a bird dog before, and I suppose it would be nice to have some help too. The four-hour ride to the breeder's home was uneventful, as my wife assumed the normal position during our trips, sleeping most of the way. My son and daughter were excited, trying to pick a name for the pup before they even saw it. I doubt much of my attention was paid to them, though. I had been waiting 26 years for this puppy, and all the dreams whirling through my head kept me busy. I was trying hard to remember all the important stuff I had read about picking the perfect pup. When we arrived at the breeder's home, I again was surprised when that 14-year-old boy climbed right into the puppy pen. He instantly was engulfed by seven white and gray blurs of fur. What was he doing? He can't pick the pup. It's supposed to be mine. Sure enough, one of the pups took a shine to him after all the others lost interest. That pup settled in next to the kid's tennis shoe and just wanted his ears scratched. As I looked at the puppy, I thought, that isn't the picture of what a setter needed to be. The pink rims around his eyes, mouth, and nose kind of made him look sick. There was no sense trying to win, though. The pup would not leave the boy's side. My opinion didn't matter. While the pup grew and training him became an everyday thing, soon this little guy was coming when called and not peeing on the floor anymore. As far as bird dog training went, videos and books went, along with a few paid trips to trainers, and it helped a bunch. Ray, a friend of mine, wanted to watch him hunt one day to see how he did. After a short walk in the field, his comment of, "That's gonna be a good dog," brought leaps of joy to my heart. I didn't really know much about gauging the dog's progress. One thing was for sure, though, my family had fallen head over heels in love with this white speckled dog. That was the start of many fond memories, one of which was sharing of a cookie out of my field lunch while sitting next to a tree in northern Michigan. Duke hadn't pointed a thing that day, and yet it wasn't all that important at the young age of 5 months. I guess most of the memories didn't involve the ruffed grouse, woodcock, and pheasants that he pointed. It was more of just the days we spent together, whatever we were doing. One of the best moments happened on Christmas Day when Duke was 3 and a half. My wife waited until all the presents were open and then handed me an envelope. She had put a deposit in with the breeder for another puppy. Maybe a little sister for Duke and another bird dog for us. That little pink-eyed pup the 14-year-old had picked out had turned into a wonderful pet and completely won the heart of my wife. Before I knew it, both dogs were doing everything I asked of them, taking hand signals, honoring each other's points, and quartering at just the right range. They complimented each other and were just a joy to be around. One of the highest compliments they received was when a hunt preserve owner asked us to guide for some of his clients. And yet another time, a Ruffed Grouse Society chapter asked us to take some kids afield at their annual youth hunt. This past fall, we had been hunting more than my wife expected, with a trip to the UP of Michigan and locally on the lower. Another trip to the Big Open Prairie of South Dakota was also in the works when Duke just stopped eating. It was the first part of November. I thought maybe he had picked up a virus or something, and off to the vet we went. Our South Dakota trip wasn't until the first week in December, so it might be good to let him recover some strength anyway. I could see it in the vet's eyes as mine were beginning to blur. The blood tests and x-rays confirmed it was lymphoma, and Duke was very sick. The best option, and really the only one, was steroid treatment to help him feel better until the cancer became too much for his body to handle. He responded quickly to the steroids and started eating everything in sight. When we went to South Dakota, my buddies commented that there was no way that this dog was sick. He performed flawlessly and pointed his first sharp-tailed grouse. I knew it was coming soon, but reveled in the fact that this dog of 6 and a half years had become the dog that trains his owner, the kind of dog you often hear about. After the South Dakota trip, it wasn't long before we had to quit hunting. The last hunt with Duke was a short 3-pheasant preserve hunt that lasted maybe 30 minutes. I didn't want him to overexert himself and suffer for it. He locked up on 2 of the 3 and honored his sister on the third. It was New Year's Eve of 2005. The trip to the vets had to be taken just 16 days later. It was the right decision, but that was not much comfort. Duke's eyes and the restless, sleepless nights told me he was struggling and the pain was just too much for him to handle. I really didn't know how the boy that had picked the pup up years earlier would take it. He had been told by both the vet and I of what was to come. I was pretty sure any explanation was somewhat inadequate. How would he handle it? As the doctor and assistant walked to the truck, the boy held Duke close. It seemed impossible to be there and watch. Have you been though before? The doctor asked. Have you been through this before? The doctor asked. I nodded yes, and the boy never took his eyes off his dog. Again, my eyes began to blur, and the color of the world around me went to all gray. The tear-filled moments seemed endless. I had to be strong for the boy. He was in the midst of uncontrollable emotions. My eyes finally cleared amongst the condolences from the doctor and assistant. The drive home wouldn't be possible if I paid attention to the boy. I tried to stay focused on driving. The audible sound of, "Good boy, Duke," resonated as we drove home. A place had been reserved for Duke in our backyard, and the rest of the family gathered to say goodbye. A few pheasant tail feathers and the boy's favorite hunting hat were placed next to the soft, white, speckled dog. A memory-filled 5 months has passed now, and almost every day the boy and I walk past the place that holds our pup. If you listen carefully, you would hear our hearts say that same resonant phrase, "Good boy, Duke." You see, the 14-year-old boy from 6 and a half years ago and I are actually one and the same. The pup named Duke had allowed me to be 14 years old again. He was, after all, my pup.
It's quite a story.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we've really been fortunate to hear some incredible stories from...
It's worth the read, too.
Yeah, yeah. So we started doing that a couple months ago after Hank passed away. These retrieving memories, and our listeners have sent in stories and powerful ones, ones that give us a good reminder to scratch our dogs under the chin and rub their ears a little bit every time we see them. You and I were talking about this the other day, too. There are unlimited amount of stories out there about our dogs, other people's dogs. And I think what we should do is continue telling stories about dogs, but let's tell stories about any dog. They can still be with us. Agreed. Exciting moments from the field, and don't have to be dogs that have passed. They can be. They don't have to be anymore.
Right.
Let's do that.
Yeah, I think we want to honor those that have passed, just like this story, which is fabulous, but we want to celebrate those that are still with us too. Mm-hmm. So we're coming into the hunting season now. There should be some really fun and good stories about your dog that you want to share with us. And it can be a great retrieve, a flush. It could be something wacky. We've all been there.
Right.
I mean, you had to drag your dog out of the chasm last year. Right. So we all can relate, and we want to cherish the memories of the dogs that pass 100%. But let's also celebrate those that are by our sides this fall.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, there's quite a few ways to get a hold of us. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook. Just search for @TheFlushTV, and you'll find us. You can go to our website, TheFlush.TV, and you can fill out a contact us form. It'll come through either myself or somebody here, and we'll make sure that we get these awesome stories on the air. Big thanks to Randy for sharing his. I know that was, again, something he wrote himself back in 2006 to help him get over the loss of his pup. And so I really appreciate him being able, willing to share that.
That as one well hit as, close to home for me.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, if you need a bird hunting fix and you're just getting jacked up like we are for hunting season, you can watch episodes of the Flush television show on there, are available now in their entirety on our YouTube channel from the last, I don't know, 6-7 seasons. And our shows are airing right now in the Outdoor channel. A little insider nugget. There's a app out there called Friendly TV, I believe. It's not the word friendly. It's FRNDLY, all capitals. I believe that's how you spell it. They stream the Outdoor channel. Yeah. So I heard that from, I'm not going to say who, but somebody at the network.
Okay.
So if you cut the cord and you don't have Dish or you're not getting the Outdoor channel, I want to say it's like $5 a month.
Oh.
So you can stream Outdoor channel through that network, and you're getting it real time. And then again, of course, our episodes will all go on our YouTube channel after the season completely comes to a close at the end of December this year. Scott, you're a brave man for inviting strangers to hunt with you, but in all reality, we hunt with strangers all the time.
They're not really strangers.
They're not,
they?
Once you spend
they're
a day
really
in the field.
They're really just long-lost brothers and sisters of the bird hunting community that we haven't met yet.
Yeah, I had an email from a viewer saying, "What if" was the title of the email, and then he said, "What if you hunted with a regular Joe Schmo instead of a credentialed PF biologist?" And I answered, "We do all the time. Hunt with people just like you and love to share your story. So please tell me more." And you know, we may get it into our rundown for this season. It might be next year, but any idea is a good one. Send them our way. And if you have guest ideas for this show that you want us to interview, send them our way too. We love to hear from you. Please keep in touch.
Right.
Any parting thoughts?
Travis and I are actually regular Joe Schmoes.
Yes, we are.
We just happen to have a camera behind us.
I know.
In front of us.
Pinch myself.
And if you come on the Hank Hunt, you'll realize just what a regular Joe Schmo I am when I miss my first four shots.
Right. And then you can see how somebody else pulls a trigger and all of a sudden, you know, oh, he looks like he's just a superstar out there. And I will say there's an episode coming up here in a week or two of our South Dakota road trip. And I was watching it back, and the angle that the camera was, every time I'd raise my gun, somebody else would fire, and the bird would go down, and I looked like I shot like 9 birds the first day. And I already know I'm going to get viewers that are like, "What are you doing
You're
out there,
your limit. Game?"
Yeah, exactly. And there's a few of them where I didn't even fire.
Right.
And
it looks like I
was just like a lethal gunner out there just dropping them. So save the emails. I didn't shoot over my limit that day. And there were plenty that got away too. So But anyway, we appreciate you coming on today. And
well, thanks for having me, Travis. Yep. And thanks for letting me talk about the hank hunt.
Yeah, it's
and
exciting.
Please join us if you can.
Yep, definitely. Again, you can reach out to us. Otherwise, go to Brown's Hunting Lodge, and you will find more information there. And Scott has given the number. We'll try to post it here as well. Many ways to reach out. Do it quick before it fills up. So thank you again for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank, reminding you to take the time to introduce someone new to the field.